Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to take a moment, a necessary pause really, to reflect on Brother Steve's message from this past Sunday night.
His kingdom will come.
That's the one. It was just packed with so much history and prophetic context.
It really was. It was more than just a review of prophecy, I thought. It was just this stunning visual of God's complete and total sovereignty. Hmm. When you lay out the fates of those ancient kings, those empires, you see this clear pattern. God is in control of every timeline, every single rise, and, you know, every spectacular fall.
And that's really what we want to do here. We want to try and break down some of those incredible historical moments from, you know, the mighty king being humbled to the way world empires were just split apart.
And connect them.
And connect them directly to the challenge that we're facing today. Especially the things that came up in the closing prayer. You know, how do we actually use the spiritual freedom we have? And what does it really mean to set a lasting example for our kids in, well, in this very confusing time?
I think we have to slow down and consider it. Because if we can recognize that God was orchestrating the incredibly complex politics and military moves of the world's greatest powers thousands of years ago,
right,
then we have to gain some perspective on our own struggles now. Our small daily decisions, they are absolutely within the scope of his grand plan.
So let's start where he started, with that powerful opening image from the vision, the beast, the eagle.
Yeah.
He focused on that moment where its wings were plucked off, it's lifted from the earth, made to stand on 2 feet like a man, and then it's given a man's heart. It's such a specific, almost bizarre sequence.
It is, but it's a perfect match for Nebuchadnezzar. That's what's so compelling. It lines up directly with the account of his humiliation in Daniel chapter 4.
Okay.
The plucking of the wings. That's the removal of his pride, his power. He stood on his balcony, looked out of his kingdom, and he boasted, "Is not this great Babylon which I have built?"
And God's judgment was so swift. I mean, it wasn't a military defeat. He struck his mind. He reduced the greatest king on earth to a beastly state.
Can you imagine?
That kind of public, profound insanity. It must have been terrifying for his court to see.
Oh, think about the humiliation. He was driven from his palace, eating grass like an ox, his hair growing out like feathers, his fingernails like a bird's claws. This wasn't just a temporary illness. This was a total stripping of his humanity, of his regal authority. He was brought to the absolute lowest point to prove one thing. All earthly power is just borrowed.
But the vision also highlights the restoration. It says he was lifted up from the earth and given a man's heart. What is that last part, the man's heart? What does that signify? Is it more than just his sanity returning?
I think so. That's the essential insight, really. The man's heart isn't just the ability to reason again. It's the capacity for humility, for worship. He didn't just get his mind back.
He got perspective.
He recognized the sovereignty of God. He blessed and honored the Most High, whose dominion is everlasting. The lesson is so clear. Mm. God's power is absolute, but his goal is often the transformation, the restoration of a repentant heart, even the heart of the proudest king on earth.
That pattern, you know, pride, then judgment, and then the chance for restoration, it really sets the tone for all the history that comes after.
It does.
So moving from Babylon, we get to the rise of the Medo-Persian Empire, the bear. The thing I found so interesting was the visual of the bear being raised up on one side, like it was about to take a big step.
That imagery says so much about the political situation at the time. You know, even though we call it the Medo-Persian Empire, the Persians had become the dominant partner. Oh. The Medes were sidelined. They were, for all intents and purposes, second-class citizens. So that raised side of the bear, it represents the unequal, the greater importance and military might of the Persian side.
And the three ribs in its mouth. That's believed to be the empires they defeated, right? Mm-hmm. To show their appetite for conquest.
Exactly. The defeated Babylonians, and then the huge conquest of Egypt, and also the kingdom of Lydia. This bear wasn't just powerful, it was relentlessly hungry, just consolidating power all across the Middle East.
But if the bear was hungry and methodical, the next power that came along was just terrifying in its speed.
Alexander the Great.
It's still just so hard to wrap your mind around his timeline. He conquered the known world, running over everything, and he did it all before he was 33 years old.
Yeah.
His scale of conquest was just without equal.
And that speed is critical because it fits the prophetic timeline perfectly.
Yeah.
History confirms how fast he rose and also how suddenly he fell. It's believed to be a quick alcohol-induced death in Babylon.
Right.
He defied all military logic to conquer that fast, only for his own human weakness to catch up with him just as quickly.
And this is where the prophecy gives us that crucial political clarity. His empire wasn't inherited by a son or a single general.
Yeah.
The beast had four heads. It fragmented instantly.
This is the genius of the detail. That fragmentation, happening immediately on his death, it defined the next several centuries. It shaped the world that Christ is born into. It wasn't a slow decay.
No.
The four great generals just carved up that colossal kingdom right away.
So for those of us trying to track how this all feeds into the New Testament period, what are those four divisions we need to remember?
Well, the four generals and their regions created the constant conflict we read about later. First, you had Cassander, who took what we'd call Greece and Macedonia today.
Okay.
Then Lysimachus was given Thrace and Asia Minor. And that region, Asia Minor, becomes so important because that's where Paul will eventually plant key churches like Ephesus and Galatia.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Seleucus. He took Syria and the Middle East, and he established the ruthless Seleucid dynasty. And finally, you had Ptolemy, who took Egypt.
So the prophecy doesn't just predict that the kingdom will fall. It predicts the precise geopolitical environment for warring states that God's people would have to navigate until the Romans came along.
It shows that God is detail-oriented. He knew the messy human parts involved. And speaking of messy human parts, Brother Steve shared that bit of trivia about Alexander's life.
Oh, right. His father being tough and his mother, who reportedly kept snakes.
Yes.
It's an interesting detail, isn't it? It just grounds the story. These massive, earth-shaking, prophetic kingdoms, they're built and run by real, complicated people.
Absolutely.
People with petty arguments and strange habits and, you know, human failings like alcoholism. It just reinforces that contrast. The kingdom that lasts forever is managed by an eternal, perfect God.
While the empires that fall were founded by flawed, passionate, and let's be honest, often cruel human beings.
This whole historical review led right into a discussion about warfare, didn't it? Specifically the shift that came with the Greeks, the rise of the polis, the city-states.
Right. Before the Greeks, armies were often these huge, centralized imperial forces like the Persians. The polis emphasized local identity, citizen soldiers, and it drastically changed military tactics. And that brings us to that really powerful analogy Brother Steve used.
The Spartans.
The Spartans and the Battle of Thermopylae.
That example just shows such profound dedication. 300 Greeks, most of them Spartans, holding off 10,000 Persians trying to get through that narrow pass. Pass.
Their whole society was dedicated to it in a way that's, well, it's almost unimaginable for us. They were raised from age 9 or 11 just to be warriors.
Mm-hmm.
Their entire life was geared toward military perfection.
They never expected to come home from battle.
Never. They trained their whole lives for one purpose, to defend a small, physical piece of land.
And this is where we have to make the connection for ourselves. If defending a physical pass for a temporary earthly kingdom required that level of lifelong, rigorous, utterly committed training,
yes.
What does that imply about the depth of focus and preparation required of us right now for the spiritual fight?
That is the pivotal question, isn't it? If worldly kingdoms demand that kind of dedication to a physical goal that is ultimately destined to fail, because the Spartan kingdom fell too, then our focus on eternal things has to be even sharper. If we know God is sovereign over all of history, our response should be an intentionality that far surpasses any earthly warrior.
And that leads us right to the application, to the points that came up at the end of the service in that group prayer led by Brother Roger. This is where the history meets our responsibility today.
The first thing was gratitude. That was so meaningful. We take it for granted so often, but we have to remember, for thousands of years, people were constantly oppressed. They literally could not gather together to worship God freely like we can right now.
We live in this incredible but maybe temporary moment of liberty. And the prayer request was focused on that mandate. Help us use this freedom so we can show people God's love and his grace.
That's our mission today.
It is. History has given us this specific window of opportunity. But the prayer, it also moved to a very raw and I think a shared concern among so many Christian parents today.
Yes, it did.
There was that acknowledgement that sometimes they look at their own children and they just feel discouraged. That their kids don't seem like they see the important things.
Or that they don't grasp the spiritual reality of God's kingdom. It's a deep struggle.
It is. We understand the prophetic warnings. We see the world pulling so hard in the other direction, and we just desperately want our children to see the light. And when they seem resistant or just distracted, that concern can feel overwhelming.
But the encouragement that was shared was so vital. We have to trust the timeline. Sometimes their eyes do open as they get older. I mean, many of us can say we didn't fully grasp our faith until we were older, too.
That's true.
So the closing plea was really twofold. First, pray that their eyes can be open, but also help us, the parents, the church, to be good examples and to just show your love.
That brings the core responsibility right back to us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
God has shown that he will humble kings and he will divide empires to make sure his prophetic word is fulfilled. Our response in this moment of freedom, it just can't be passive.
Our battlefield might not be a physical pass like Thermopylae, but it is certainly within the walls of our own homes, in our communities. Using our freedom means showing consistent grace and love, understanding that the greatest historical lesson we can pass on isn't just the facts of Daniel.
No.
It's the reality of an unshakable, living faith.
When you look back at the scoop of history we just talked about, Nebuchadnezzar eating grass, Alexander's empire fracturing overnight, it just gives you such conviction. God's kingdom will come. So the question is, how intentional are we being while we wait?
We have to remember the dedication of those ancient warriors. If even the fierce discipline training of the Spartan phalanx couldn't sustain their earthly empire against time and change, then what level of committed, intentional spiritual discipline, what kind of consistent daily training in prayer, in scripture, in being that example is required of us right now to ensure our faith not only survives the darkness, but thrives for those children whose eyes we are praying so desperately will be opened. That kind of commitment, it's for life.
A profound challenge for every one of us to take up today. Thank you for joining us for this reflection on history and holiness.
My pleasure.